This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
former Prime Ministers Domingo Simoes Pereira and Umaro Sissoco Embalo will face each other in a December 29th runoff election to decide who will be the next president of Guinea-Bissau.
That's Cipriano Kassama, the parliament speaker in Guinea-Bissau, on no presidential candidate winning the presidential election, forcing a runoff vote next month. Details coming up also. Botswana's opposition coalition has gone to court to challenge the results of last month's general election. And Sudan has launched an effort to stop violence against women through a global campaign. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, voters in Namibia went to the polls today in an election that presents the biggest challenge to the ruling party since independence from South Africa in 1990. President Hage Geingob, who is seeking a third term, faces a challenger from within his own SWAPO party. Dr. Pandulin Itula is running as an independent and has worked to draw the youth vote. 96 parliament seats also are up for election. SWAPO holds 77 seats currently, but is expected to see that number fall. Geingob faces challenges because of the country's long recession, deep drought, and a new corruption scandal. Two ministers have resigned after being implicated in bribery case involving a large seafood company from Iceland. Police today arrested the former justice minister in the case. Results are expected within 48 hours. Botswana's opposition coalition has gone to court to challenge the results of last month's general election. The Umbrella for Democratic Change, UDC, lost to the ruling Botswana Democratic Party, but says there were irregularities in the electoral process. From Habrone, Botswana, Mokandisi Dube reports.
The opposition filed court papers this week challenging the October 23 general election results. The party has alleged electoral fraud in the outcomes for 16 parliamentary seats. The UDC, a coalition of opposition parties, won 15 of the 57 seats in the National Assembly. Party spokesperson Moedi Moasa says the alleged irregularities include suspected double voting. Former President Ian Khama, who quit the ruling party earlier this year, backed the opposition's challenge of the results.
There seems to be, I'm not going to use the word rigged, because when you rig, it means you deliberately try to cheat. The courts will determine whether they were rigged or not. I prefer at this stage just to refer to them as irregularities.
UTC Member of Parliament Lucas Daulo says it is only right for the courts to determine if the process was free and fair.
Well, I think we have every right to petition. And I think we should also be given space to do that. The courts of law will decide. And once they've decided, life will go on. We believe in the rule of law. And we must allow the law to take its course. And if some people are aggrieved by the results, they should be allowed to challenge those results.
The opposition parties complained about government institutions' interference in the electoral process. Duma Boko, the UTC president, pointed the finger specifically at the intelligence agency, the Directorate on Intelligence and Security Services, saying they compromised the outcome. The registrar of the High Court, Michael Mutabi, said the election petition is urgent and must be heard and determined within 90 days. A panel of High Court judges will handle the case. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Habaroni, Botswana.
Guinea-Bissau voters will be going to the polls next month for a second round of voting to decide on their next president. Results of the first round show that no candidate garnered the 50% needed to win outright.
Former Prime Ministers Domingo Simoes Pereira and Umaro Sissoco Embalo will face each other in a December 29th runoff election to decide who will be the next president of Guinea-Bissau. First round results announced Wednesday show Pereira winning 40% of the vote and Embalo trailing with 27%. Cipriano Casama, the current parliament speaker and a member of Pereira's majority party, the PGC, said while the party is disappointed with not winning the first round outright, it is hopeful of taking home more votes in the second round.
Nous allons au deuxième tour avec...
Casama says, we are going to a second tour with a lot of pride, but it's not the result that we were hoping for. But that is how democracy is. I hope that under the orientation of our party, PGC, we can start to work with the direction of the campaign and the structure of the campaign to find a real strategy to give the victory to our candidate. Pereira, who heads the PGC, has appealed to voters with his roadmap for development known as Terra Ranca, which roughly translates to restart the country in Guinea-Bissau's Portuguese-based Creole. Embalo, a former military officer, is the candidate for newly formed party MADEM G15. The party was founded after members broke away from the PGC after a political crisis ensued in 2015 when current president José Mário Vaz fired Pereira from the prime minister's position. Casama said Guinea-Bissau needs to move forward from the most recent political stagnation. He says Guinea-Bissau is a young country, a country that has a lot of resources, and we need to turn the page so that we can initiate socioeconomic development for the country. Young voters have said their main goal is that Guinea-Bissau move forward. Meanwhile, another round of campaigning will kick off December 13th. Ricky Shryock for VOA News, Dakar.
The nearly three-month-old stay-away by junior doctors at Zimbabwe public hospitals has spread to their senior colleagues. The junior doctors have not been going to work since early September, saying they are not incapacitated, but they are too incapacitated because they can't even afford the commute as hyperinflation has eroded their buying power. Now, senior doctors who have been holding the fort and attending to most emergency cases in hospitals have sent a letter saying they too are incapacitated. Reporter Kuzai Zanawash has the details.
The government is calling the stay-away action an illegal strike, which has resulted in hearings and expulsion of hundreds of doctors. Minister of Information, Monica Mutswangwa, gave an update on the hearings.
The doctor's strike has now gone beyond 84 days, with the doctors continuing to cite incapacitation. As such, health service provision at most central hospitals remain constrained. Pertaining to disciplinary hearings for striking doctors, the minister informed cabinet that 508 disciplinary cases on doctors that have not been coming to work have so far been heard, out of which 498 doctors were found guilty.
Mutswangwa says the hearings have resulted in the expulsion of 448 doctors. Despite the rampant dismissals, senior doctors served notice yesterday that they are also incapacitated. Dr. Norman Matara is with the Zimbabwe Association for Doctors for Human Rights.
The situation has always been a grave situation, and it has been made worse by the declaration by the senior doctors that they will not attend to emergency. It's almost similar. They are also citing incapacitation that they do not actually have the means to come to work. They also do not have the means to do their work. And by means, I mean the salary that they are getting is not enough.
Matara says hospitals also lack medicines and sundries to treat patients. Mutswangwa says government has already served the striking doctors with letters to attend their hearings. Yet Dr. Shingai Nyaguse, who speaks on behalf of the senior doctors, says they are not striking, but rather they are too incapacitated. Matara says it's a pity that government is firing the few doctors they have.
The future is very bleak for the poor citizens. They are actually going to face a lot of challenges in accessing healthcare. We just hope and pray that the Minister of Health and the Minister will come back to their senses. Healthcare is becoming a privilege only for the rich, only for the rich. And it's unfortunate that the politicians who have destroyed the public sector have got an alternative, which is to go to foreign countries.
Zimbabwe Vice President, retired General Constantine Chiwenga, has been away for months seeking health care in China. Matara says hospitals that are usually packed have been empty lately. He fears that many who are ill have been dying quietly at home with no doctors to treat them. Senior doctors want the dismissed doctors reinstated and to be paid living wages, as well as stocking up hospitals with critical supplies and updating infrastructure. In the meantime, patients ranging from women giving birth to accident victims are scrambling to find midwives and affordable treatments. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunavashe from Harare.
Fifteen past the hour, you're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. France says it is determined to continue fighting terrorism despite losing 13 of its soldiers during a counterinsurgency operation in Mali. Lisa Bryant has more from Paris.
The deaths of the soldiers late Monday represent France's biggest military loss in three decades. The 13 troops were killed during a counterterrorism combat operation in Mali when the two helicopters the troops were on slammed into each other. French President Emmanuel Macron announced his deep sadness over their deaths, and France's National Assembly observed a minute of silence.
Avec une profonde tristesse.
French Defense Minister Florence Parly described the men as exceptional soldiers and heroes who fought for liberty until the end. She said support from allies strengthened France, allowing it to continue the fight against terrorism. 41 French soldiers have been killed in Mali since France launched its Barkhane counterinsurgency operation against Islamist militants in the Sahel in 2014. The latest deaths draw attention to the roughly 4,500 French troops stationed across West Africa, raising questions about whether they are stretched too thin. France is supporting a so-called G5 Sahel alliance, grouping five area countries against armed extremist groups. But experts say the militant groups are strengthening. Regional forces and UN peacekeepers have come under attack. Some commentators say France does not have enough military support, and the G5 Sahel alliance has yet to achieve even a symbolic victory. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on The Voice of America. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Seventeen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Guinea-Bissau voters will be going to the polls next month for a second round of voting. And Botswana's opposition coalition has gone to court to challenge the results of last month's general election. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Amid a global surge of infections with dengue and fierce climate change will make it worse, an international alliance of researchers presented new showing that the disease fell dramatically in communities in Indonesia, Vietnam, Brazil, and Australia. The reduction in cases occurred in communities where researchers had released lab-grown mosquitoes carrying Wolbachia, a bacteria that prevents mosquitoes from transmitting dengue when they bite humans. For VOA, Mavis Ochera spoke with Professor Cameron Simmons, the Director of Impact Assessment and expert in the epidemiology of dengue at the World Mosquito Program.
So our work began in Australia in 2011, and we've deployed our method, which is called Wolbachia, into mosquito populations in northern Australia, protecting 350,000 people. And we've essentially eliminated dengue transmission as a public health problem in northern Australia now over the last 8 or 9 years. In Indonesia, we've done a study in the city of Yogyakarta, where in one community that was treated with the Wolbachia method, we've seen a 76% reduction in dengue incidents compared to neighbouring areas that were not treated with Wolbachia. Over in Brazil, we've seen a reduction in dengue and chikungunya incidents in locations where Wolbachia has been deployed. And so over in different countries, over different time periods, we're seeing the same trend that Wolbachia is delivering public health benefits by reducing the incidence of dengue and chikungunya.
So can you tell me how the reduction in dengue cases occurred?
Yeah, so our intervention called Wolbachia is a bacteria, and we spread that bacteria through the mosquito population in each community. And that bacteria makes the mosquitoes unable to transmit these viruses. If the mosquito can't transmit the virus, they can't give the virus to humans, and they can't make people sick. And so we're not reducing the mosquito population, we're changing the nature of the mosquito population so that they're no longer able to transmit these diseases.
Tell me more about the reduction in Indonesia.
This is a community in seven neighbourhoods in the city of Yogyakarta in central Java, where Wolbachia was deployed, a population of about 65,000 people. And we deployed Wolbachia there 2.5 years ago, and we've been watching to look at dengue case notifications in the Wolbachia treated neighbourhood and comparing it to very similar neighbourhoods nearby that were not treated with Wolbachia. And so what we've seen over the last 2.5 years is that the Wolbachia treated neighbourhoods have 76% fewer dengue cases than neighbouring untreated neighbourhoods. And so this is therefore giving us a strong signal of public health benefit using this method. And very importantly, the method is self-sustaining, so that once Wolbachia is present in the mosquitoes, it remains in the mosquitoes for many years and probably decades, and so very likely provides that public health benefit for many years after the initial deployment of the Wolbachia mosquitoes.
Does this highlight a potential approach to fight dengue and related mosquito-borne diseases on a global scale?
Yes. This Wolbachia also has an effect on the chikungunya virus, which is also transmitted by the Aedes aegypti mosquito. Wolbachia also has an effect on the Zika virus, and so this intervention should protect communities from these three diseases. There are other vector-borne diseases that are important, like Japanese encephalitis or indeed malaria, but those diseases are transmitted by other species of mosquito, not the Aedes aegypti mosquito. Our method is specifically focused to the Aedes aegypti mosquito. And so this particular tool is very focused at the moment around dengue, chikungunya, and the Zika virus prevention.
Now, are there updates on a trial with a new dengue vaccine?
Yeah, correct. So there's a company called Takeda that has announced some phase 3 vaccine results of a new candidate dengue vaccine. And so that particular vaccine still has to finish its journey through the clinical trial development phase, and so is not yet a licensed vaccine and not available to buy in any country. I think this year is, especially this year across Asia, Southeast Asia, it's been a very big year for dengue transmission. A very large numbers of cases, a large number of deaths. Dengue's emerging as a very big problem in Brazil this year. And so I think the tools that we've used to try and stop the spread of these mosquito-borne diseases over several decades, I think we're seeing that those tools simply fail to stop epidemics of dengue fever, and we desperately need new tools like the Wolbachia method that we're using.
That was Cameron Simmons, an expert in the epidemiology of dengue at the World Mosquito Program. He was speaking with VOA's Mavis Ocheri. A Kenyan task force has recommended sweeping governmental changes, including restoring the post of prime minister, establishing a mixed cabinet, and devoting more resources to avoid future election unrest. The report by the Building Bridges Initiative, BBI, comes 2 years after Kenya's heated 2007 election that almost split the country. From Nairobi, Mohamed Yusuf reports.
At a public gathering attended by thousands of Kenyans, President Uhuru Kenyatta on Wednesday bemoaned the country's strife-laden political challenges and welcomed governmental reforms proposed by the Building Bridges Initiative, or BBI, in a newly released report.
Tofauti zetu sio kubwa vile, Mashindano ndio inatuletea shida.
Kenyatta says our differences are not that big. What is bringing all this problem is political competition. Our opinions are not that different. He says we decided to sit and even look beyond 2017 election. Why is it after every 5 years Kenyans must fight each other, we must shed blood, destroy properties, business comes to a halt, and fear engulf our people? These questions were the beginning of the Building Bridges Initiative idea. Kenyatta says the BBI task force formed in March 2018 when opposition leader Raila Odinga and President Kenyatta met in the aftermath of the heated 2017 election that almost split the country. The task force has sought to guide a national discussion on the country's political future as Kenyatta serves his final presidential term. The report recommends retaining Kenya's presidential system while empowering president to appoint a prime minister from parliament in hopes of promoting ethnic diversity and balance in the government. Kenyans are being urged to read the report and provide feedback. Initial reactions appear positive from both the government and key elements of the opposition. Odinga said the BBI report will unite the country.
So we want to see a new Kenya. And out of this, a new Kenya is going to emerge. Kenya that we all want to see. We want to see all the people of Kenya united, working together as one people. That was the purpose of this BBI thing.
But praise is not universal. Opposition Senator Ledama Olekina of Narok County slammed the proposed BBI reforms.
One of my biggest problems that I have with this report is that during Moi era, we talked about a dictatorial state. Now we are talking about an imperial presidency, where you've given that president all the powers to choose who is going to be the prime minister, to choose who is going to be the cabinet secretaries. I think it is wrong. Let us give Kenyans an opportunity to elect their own leaders.
Political commentator Martin Andati says Kenya's leaders have missed what is really ailing the country.
The issues which have made us fight and the issues which caused the polarization in the country were captured very well by the late Kofi Annan in the Agenda 4 issues. But nobody has, none of the Agenda 4 issues is being fully addressed. The solution is in what Kofi Annan told us, a lean commission, which is fairly representative, but you also have a proper functional electronic voting system. Nobody's talking about that.
Kenyans lived through bouts of political violence in 2017, 2013, and in 2007, 2008, when former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan worked to end the strife. Kenyans will have several weeks to read and debate the 156-page report's recommendations, which could be decided in a referendum or by parliament. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Thomas Blondet, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, South Sudan's president and chief rebel leader postponed the formation of a unity government for another 100 days. Inside the political turmoil in South Sudan, on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.